welcome to this episode of Battling with Business with me, Chris Kitchener.
And me, Gareth Tennant.
In this podcast, we explore ideas and concepts around teams and teamwork, leaders and leadership, and all things in between. It's a discussion between a former Royal Marines officer and a product manager from the world of business, comparing and contrasting our experiences as we attempt to work out what makes teams, leaders, and businesses tick. And today, we are going pretty much back to the beginning. Gareth, do you happen to remember what episode it was that we first talked about strategy?
Oh, God. It was one of the first episodes we did, didn't we? So we did an episode where we introduced ourselves. There was one early on personal narratives, one on vision and mission, which wasn't the strategy one, but he's obviously related. So I'm going to say 4 or 5.
Okay, nearly episode 7, but it was a super early one. And I haven't actually listened to it for a while because it's over a year ago we did this. But I'm pretty sure at the end we said we will come back to strategy and talk about it again. And obviously, in many, many episodes, we have talked about strategy. But you wanted to particularly return to it because I think you, as it were, wanted to revisit what we'd said. And there was a couple of aspects that you've been thinking about noodling on. So tell the listener, what is it you want to talk about to revisit the idea of strategy?
So I think what we did in that first episode was we talked about what strategy was. We looked at a whole load of different definitions. And it's one of these words that is used by different people and different organizations in very different ways. But we looked at some of the definitions and we looked at the difference between strategy and some of the concepts that often get used as a synonym, like tactics or planning. And we used that episode to kind of draw out some definitions and explore relationships between these concepts. What I'd like to do in this episode is to talk about why it's important to have a strategy and how you go about building and managing a strategy and how you make strategic decisions.
I think that's brilliant. And whenever we do these episodes, often you'll hear either myself or Gareth say, it's a bit of a coincidence because this is what we were doing in our sort of day jobs. For me, this is actually very true. In the last week, I've been engaged in some activities, arguably more on the tactic side. There's the whole discussion that say, do these tactics drive us further along in our strategy to our vision? So this is, again, we're going to mix the military and the civilian, but it's relevant across the board. If you haven't listened to the episode on strategy, I would almost urge you to pause this one, go download episode 7 and listen to what is strategy. And by the way, if for no other reason than enjoy me kind of going, I get slightly stressed about the dividing line between strategy, tactics, and vision. Even though I've been doing this for over 30 years of my life, it still puts me on edge. I'm feeling actually a little bit calmer than I did in the past. But let's go back. What's your best shot at a simple description of vision, strategy, and tactics so we know what we're talking about here?
Right. So a vision is the statement that allows a collective group of people to understand what it is you're trying to achieve. So it is your North Star.
I like that phrase, North Star.
Yeah. And that's a phrase that obviously comes from the commercial world and is used quite a lot. We don't tend to use that in the military too much, but it is effectively the outline of what you want to look like, what you want to be doing at some point in the future when you've gone through a process of change. So for me, strategy is achieving one or more long-term goals or objectives under conditions of uncertainty. We did a whole episode on volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. And effectively, it's this idea of there are things outside of your control. There are things that will change and there are things that you don't know about. But that doesn't mean you can't start to think about how you're going to achieve these goals over the long term. So you've got a vision. That's your North Star. How do you get towards that. And it's where the analogy kind of falls over a little
bit. But I like the how you're going to get there. There are some things that the strategy potentially implies, but it is not a list of you do these 12 things and you'll be successful.
No, absolutely.
I think that leads us now into tactics, which...
So tactics is the use of capability to achieve things. So we did an episode not that long ago on Karl von Clausewitz, and he, as a military theorist, obviously talked a lot about tactics and strategy. And he talked about tactics being the actions that are undertaken in the combat, and strategy being the goals that are achieved using multiple combats in the campaign to achieve victory or peace. And he kind of, depending on which bits of On War you're in, he talks about victory or peace. Now, that's a very, very military and war kind of view of it. But effectively, you have capability, people, equipment, knowledge, money, time. Using those things to achieve tasks is tactics.
In my simple world, building a feature by spending money, using people, writing code, releasing software, that is a tactic.
Yeah.
The things that we build should support the strategy for how we get to ultimate victory, however you might declare ultimate victory. Way oversimplified.
You started this episode saying you still sometimes feel a little bit uncomfortable. And I think there are these blurred lines. So although it's super simple to say tactics is doing stuff to, you know, achieve a task, strategy is achieving long-term goals under conditions of uncertainty. It might be from a particular perspective that what you consider to be tactical, actually somebody else feels there is uncertainty and the achieving of that is a strategic problem. And so it's never quite as simple as there is tactics, these are the Lego bricks, and there is strategy, this is me having built the model.
It's funny, I'm gonna go the other way. I think that's a fair division, because I think that was my point. I think I argued, unconvincingly perhaps, that, you know, tactics blends into strategy. I'm a little bit more comfortable now. And the phrase I use, which is how you might go about doing something, which describes the kinds of things you would do, describes the kinds of outcomes you're looking for. And then you can slot different things in there to achieve that. There's another thing that you've said as well on multiple occasions, which again, I quite like, which is strategy changes every day. And it's part of this sort of uncertainty as well. Tactics, you almost write a list of things you're going to do and then you execute on those. Strategy continues to evolve as you get there. Anyway, sorry, yeah. I'm dragging us back in. I wanted to do just a really quick recap to sort of bring us up to speed. But I know you want to talk about some of these other things, like what makes good strategy, what makes bad strategy, and some other elements that I know you've been wrestling with over the last few weeks. So back to you now.
Yeah. So one of the things we've not talked about in the definitions is planning. And of course, we've mentioned planning lots of times before. You can either use the Eisenhower quote, which is plans are useless, but planning is indispensable. Or you can use the Mike Tyson quote, everybody has a plan until you get punched in the face. And both of those mean the same thing, which is effectively things change, there are things outside of your control. Planning is the allocation of resources over time to achieve things. So it's somewhere between the tactics of actually doing it, planning it out, and strategy, which is over long term. Planning often has to nullify that uncertainty. So you have to make assumptions about things that are outside of your control. And that is why plans effectively become useless, because we have a saying in the military, no plan survives first contact with the enemy.
But having a plan is valuable because you've got to know what you're doing tomorrow. In fact, you might need to know what you're doing next week and next month. But we've discussed this, and this really resonates with me, the act of planning is the really important bit, because it's as you made the connection between the strategy and the tactics, the act of planning is almost this virtuous circle of what's our strategy, so what should we do? If we do that, does it help our strategy? If that's our strategy, so what should we do? I've been in businesses where we do yearly planning, and in a sense, it has very limited value. Everyone gets very excited, and then all of a sudden, when it, the moment you finished your planning, the plans get consigned to a filing cabinet, and people walk away from that. Quarterly planning gets better, but again, the problem is most businesses I've ever worked in, you do quarterly planning, and then no one ever talks about it afterwards. The real value of planning is the conversation itself. If planning is an iterative process, whatever your cycles are, that figures out what you've done, figures out the impact, works out what uncertainty, works out what progress that takes you down the strategy, you're onto a winner.
Yeah, and of course, two aspects to that. One is, if you, as a group, go through planning, you are now all talking the same language. And as you have to change from your plan because of these externalities that have changed the situation, everybody recognizes that, or at least everybody is more likely to recognize it. And the second thing, of course, is within organizations, it's very often the case that you will delegate tasks down to subgroups, and they will need to work out how they're going to achieve their tasks over the long term under conditions of uncertainty. And so having a plan means you can start to coordinate activity, you can start to have those feedback loops, and you can start to then collectively talk about whether you are meeting the expectations that are keeping you heading towards your strategic goal. And I've talked in the past, in fact, on that first episode, about using the analogy of a compass. If tactics is knowing how to walk over the ground, you know, put one foot in front of the other, how to navigate, how to prepare for the weather that's changing around you, how to keep a team motivated during the walk, those are all tactics that allow you to go on the journey. Strategy is having a compass that allows you to point towards that end goal, because that's the direction you want to head in. The uncertainty, of course, is all of the challenges you're going to meet on that journey on the way. The plan is effectively looking at the map and doing a time appreciation and saying, from the information that I have now, this is what I'm expecting. And then you can start on your journey to use that to say, this is taking longer than we thought, or actually there's information missing from this map and this is harder, or we've got to take a different route. The analogy only stretches so far, but it's really important to recognize that the plan, and you've used the term cycles and iteratively, it's not a one-time thing. It is something that has to be circled back on, reflected on, checked, and there has to be feedback loops that allow you to make an assessment of how well you're doing.
There's two other things that I want to throw in there as well. The feedback loops should, as and you've kind of said this, but I want to tease it out. The feedback loops should not just be, did we achieve the tactical goal? The feedback loop should be, did we achieve this tactical goal? And in doing so, did we get further on? Because I see that all the time, which is like, I was told to march to the top of the mountain. Woohoo, we made it to the top of the mountain. Yeah, but it turns out in the meantime, we didn't need to be at the top of this mountain. We need to be at the top of a different mountain. So the tactic, this, and I've seen this about plans, people get hung up on the plan and lose touch with what you were trying to achieve in the first place. There's a second thing as well, communication of this strategy from top to bottom of the organization is critical.
Yeah.
The worst strategy and plan in the world is the one that you push under the door and you give to your teams on a bit of paper. It's not their strategy. They don't understand the context. They didn't play a part in the planning. It's somebody else's plan that never works. The real trick is that if you can trickle that strategy down to the sort of the most junior person in the organization, that's when it wins. And to use the sort of a military example, in the D-Day landings, every soldier pored over maps of the area and learnt not just about their own targets, but every other target. So they understood, I'm taking this place to allow this other person to do this thing, and they are doing this. And why was that so beneficial? In the D-Day landings, particularly with the paratroop landings, they landed in the wrong place. Even though they landed in the wrong place, they could then make judgments of how to achieve the strategic goals. In other words, they could change their tactics on the fly. And so I think that's so important and difficult and often misunderstood. If the most senior person understands more than the most junior person, I'm kind of pushing this a bit too much, it's not going to work. The people on the ground who are doing the work, you have to get it done and make changes. And remember, as we said, make those iterations. If they don't understand, there's trouble. So communication, really important piece. Sorry, I had to say that because it's the world I live in where I get people going, why are we doing that thing? And that's because we don't communicate well enough.
Yeah, and I love it because once again, you know, from your perspective of the software world, the commercial world, you're reinforcing a lot of the points that come from the military way of thinking about challenge and problems. So the first thing to pick up on is you're entirely right. The have we achieved the task has to be followed by, and did the achieving of that task get us closer to our strategic goal? And that's, we did a whole episode on the difference between measuring performance and measuring effect or effectiveness. Yeah. And again, I implore the listeners to go and listen to that. Because of course, if your assumptions in your initial planning are wrong, you need the feedback to tell you why. And the second thing is, you know, your D-Day example is wonderful. And I'm going to reverse roles here. So you've given a military example. I'm going to give a civilian example, which was NASA. NASA, when being set the big, hairy, audacious goal of getting to the moon, getting people to land on the moon, had to change their operating culture. And they had to start taking risks in an engineering environment where it feels straight away like risk is something you want to mitigate, you want to reduce. But actually, if you're going to achieve new things, if you're going to find new ground, if you're going to solve challenges using new methods, new technologies, you have to start managing risk in a proactive way. And one of the ways that they had a cultural change is they got everybody in the organization to recognize their individual contribution to the overall vision and the overall goal. And that's a really crucial part of the process of imparting strategic leadership across an organization. And this comes back to this concept that we keep banging on about on this podcast, and that's the idea of mission command. And I'd like to read you something because we're going to talk about risk on this episode a little bit. And this is something I read last night from the Royal Navy's doctrine note on leadership.
Well, it's bound to be good if it's the Royal Navy doctrine leadership then.
I really like this. Once we've got through this section, I'd like to start talking about an actual organization that I'm working with to work on their strategic approach. And this is really resonant with that. So the requirements of mission command and rapid decision-making may at times conflict with safety and a tendency of management by audit. In peacetime, well-judged processes help to maintain the force. However, in war and on operations, the right answer is usually the Royal Navy's traditional approach of enabling its people to seize the initiative.
I am, of course, smiling. Hooray for the Royal Navy.
We can have a separate discussion on another day about whether everybody in the Navy lives and breathes that. But the concept of accepting, especially in a warfighting environment where people are going to die because of decision disadvantage, as in the enemy understands the situation and is quicker to respond than we are. The tendency to try and be risk averse, to try and mitigate and minimize risk, also minimizes the opportunities to learn and the opportunity to seize the initiative. And so there has to be this quite conscious process of accepting that people will take risks that may well increase the chances of an accident, that may well infringe upon, as it says, you know, safety. But in an environment that is competitive, where your adversary is trying to kill you, actually, sometimes being a little bit more unsafe actually saves more lives and gives you the key advantage.
We've got the conversation that I think will be published by now with Paul Tremelling, the former Harrier pilot, and he talks about exactly this. In fact, he gives his own personal experience in Afghanistan where he broke the rules to do exactly what you said. Now, there will be some people listening who fancy themselves as either a captain of a Royal Navy ship or a Harrier pilot who says, ah, you have just given me carte blanche to break all the rules. And I think what we want to do is we want to be very thoughtful about that. So what Paul talks about is that even though it was a split second, he was very thoughtful about the rules. He understood the rules. He understood the risk. It was a calculated risk.
Yeah.
And I say that because I've met people in the past who miss the calculation piece and go straight to the let's do something crazy. Because yeah. I heard someone say, the people who win are the ones who are crazy and take the terrible risk. That's not what we're saying here. We're saying very calculated risks. They might be risks that in the military bring more chance of danger.
Yeah.
But they are calculated nonetheless. So please don't anyone think, okay, you get to play your Joker and you can do anything you want because, well, the situation asked for it. It's a very thoughtful one of those. 100% I agree with that. And again, hooray the Royal Navy.
And it comes back to my dislike of, and I know you cringe every time I say it, but my dislike of the theme of the film Top Gun. I like the film. It's a great movie. But I dislike the glorification of the idea of a maverick. Because what we're not talking about here is the maverick who disregards the rules and, you know, as an individual, doesn't play as part of the team. And it reinforces all the wrong lessons. What we want is people that are bold enough to seize the opportunity. They see the risk-gain calculus. They make a measured decision and they decide to do something that is perhaps unexpected, that is perhaps in the eyes of somebody else would be deemed reckless and is perhaps surprising, but isn't, for its own sake, a maverick, reckless act that disregards the rules. This is where I think bringing it back to strategy is really important, because this is about strategic leadership. If you're going to, we'll talk about what makes a good or a bad strategy and how we can get it wrong after the break. But I think what's really important is to recognize strategic leadership is not just about having the creative ideas to come up with the strategy. It's about also making sure that, as you've said already, you know, you're communicating that vision and everybody understands their part in the plan. But more importantly, people understand and feel empowered and confident to apply their own judgment to seize those opportunities, to know when it's appropriate to sail close to the wind, when they know it's appropriate to break the rules. So this is not move fast and break things. This is empowering people to make decisions because the decision cycles are much, much faster if you are closer to the edge of the activity, if you are at the point of change. So this might be, you know, lots of examples we've talked about, war fighting. It might be a tactical commander or a tactical operator making a split-second judgment that in the safety of protecting other people, they're going to take a risk with Paul Tremelling flying below, you know, the cloud base. It might be as simple as somebody, I think we did an episode, I can't remember what the subject was, where I talked about a barista, you know, at the point of a customer saying, this is not what I ordered, I'm outraged, and that person saying, I'm not sure I'm empowered, but, you know, sod it. I'm going to treat the customer with, you know, absolute respect, and I'm going to offer them not just to remake their coffee, but, you know, give them a voucher. I don't know if I'm allowed to do that, but it feels like the right thing to do. And these are the kind of things that a strategic leader has to set the tone so that people know and feel comfortable, so that they're not reckless, they're not mavericks, but they're also not erring on the side of caution and missing opportunity.
I think there's a little dead end we can briefly go down. I spend a lot of my time wondering where I am on that bell curve. There are many people who have described me as the safe end of the bell curve. And I would hope there's a number of people who've seen me on the other end of the bell curve as well. But I get up every day and go, am I radical enough, or actually am I thoughtful and getting a better outcome? In other words, where do you sit on these things? We have said, you know, if you understand what you're doing, if it's a thoughtful process, Paul Tremelling, that's all good. The risk is, though, as an individual person, how do you personally know whether you're breaking the rules for a good reason or whether you've just told yourself it's a good reason? And I'll give the example, which is by implication, Paul talking about when he broke the rules was because that was an outlier. On every other occasion, he talked about how important the rules were. And so you could say, if you broke the rules once, it implies you know when to break the rules. If you break the rules every day because I'm so clever, the rules don't apply to me, that's probably a bad sign. Do you have an opinion on that? How do you know when you say, come on, lads, we're going to run up that hill, I know they're shooting at us? How do you know whether that's a good taking the initiative or a terrible taking the initiative?
So we talked in the episode about 5 dysfunctions of management books about how you can't learn everything by reading it. Sometimes you have to build experience. One of the principles of Mission Command is this idea of mutual trust. And it's the idea that you build teams, you have command relationships, so accountability, responsibility, and authority that are clear, and you put yourselves in situations where you start to understand how other people are going to act. And you do it with really small things, and you do it with things that are probably inconsequential, or even if they are consequential, they're recoverable. And you empower people and let junior leaders, subordinates, make mistakes. And then you have discussions about why they made those mistakes. And this is kind of this mentoring idea that we've talked about. And you build over time a relationship where people are honest with each other. People are willing to learn from making mistakes. And people are confident that if they make a mistake, but for the right reasons, they won't be punished. And if they made the mistake, as in the consequence of what happened, was actually the right choice, it just so happened that luck didn't go in their favor. They took the right risk. They made the right risk calculus based on the information they had, but the result didn't work out. That actually, sometimes they'll be rewarded. They'll be rewarded for being bold, even though it didn't work. And you do that on small things on a daily basis, and you build trust in teams.
It sounds like you're saying that,
what can happen is when it comes to the crunch, when it comes to a situation where somebody feels they need to make a decision, and for whatever reason they can't get hold of their boss, and then they go, but we've been told sometimes we need to be bold and decisive. Actually, it might be by that point that it's such a consequential decision, and they're not prepared, they haven't got the judgment, they haven't got the trust relationships, and they make the wrong call. That can always happen, but it's less likely to happen if you've built people up slowly.
It seems like it's practice. It's thoughtful, conscious practice to say, I did this thing, what was the result? Do I have to go left? Do I have to go right? Right is more extreme, less is less extreme. It's that thoughtful practice and having a framework within a team where you can discuss that and engage it with other people as well.
Yeah,
sorry, that was a bit of a dead end, but I think
it's an important one, and I've got in front of me here the Royal Navy's principles of mission command, and I know that the armies are very, very similar, and they're really logical and they make sense. And one of them is a clear mission, and we've talked about the fact that the mission needs to not only say what it is you want that person to do, but also why you want them to do it, so that as the situation changes, they can adapt and maybe not do what you've asked them to do, but still achieve the aim. We've talked about the fact that that needs to be quite clear, and there need to be these really clear lines of command in terms of authority, accountability, and responsibility, so people know. And so the second one is responsibility. So people need to have the ability and the obligation to act independently and decisive. Mutual trust, which we've talked about, which is a learned cultural behavior between groups, not something you read, not something that is written in a document. Effective decision making. There's a whole episode to do on how you achieve that, but it mostly is about feedback loops. It's about how you understand and recognize change in your environment. Short orders. So things people can remember, things people can hold on to when they're stressed, when the situation demands that they have to make that, you know, initiative call. They're not struggling with, you know, 6 pages of policy. Suppression of ego. So this idea that you're not being bold because you're going to earn medals, or you're not being bold so that at the quarterly review, everybody gives you a round of applause and you get a pay rise. You're being bold because it's the right thing to do. And this is where
functions of a team. We talked about this a lot in the episode.
This is where Maverick and Top Gun, you know, I think they maybe got that slightly wrong.
You've really got a problem with this. We might have to have an episode where we get the writers and Tom Cruise on so you can give them a proper going over.
What I find frustrating is it was a film that was sponsored by the US Navy in order to boost recruiting. It absolutely did that. From a measurement of effectiveness point of view, nailed that. But it was sponsored by the US Navy, who should know better. Anyway, empowerment. You've got to empower people. And this isn't, you know, I've said this many times. You don't empower people at that moment. You empower people so that they can learn through making mistakes, so they can learn where the limits of their responsibility lie, so they can be held accountable, so they can learn collectively. And then familiarity. This idea that if you know, if you're deviating away from the rules, the doctrine, the policy, you know the people that you're going to have these difficult conversations to justify your actions afterward. They're not faceless bureaucracies. They're not the big boss that I've never met. There is familiarity that allows people to feel comfortable in the fact that they will be backed up. And it goes hand in hand with that mutual trust. So I think mission command wasn't sort of the subject of this episode. And I'd like to get back to what strategy is and how you do it well. And more importantly, what isn't doing strategy well. So should we take a quick break? And when we come back, I'd like to talk about what strategy is and then some of the risks of getting strategy wrong.
Welcome back. Always pleased to see reference to the Royal Navy in our podcasts. And I think you talked a bit about mission command from the Royal Navy perspective, but we promised to talk about what makes good strategy and what are the risks and what does bad strategy look like. So Gareth, come on. What makes good strategy?
Yeah. So I am working with a client at the moment, and I've been working with them for some time, looking at what the requirements are for them to build a strategy and then implement and run that strategy. And so I'm going to anonymize this quite a lot, but I'm going to talk from a document that I have in front of me about what the process is and what it is. So the first thing is, right up front in this document, there is a section that says the purpose of this strategy document. And one of the first things it says is good strategy does not stand still. This seeks to build on the already great transformational work done by this organization. It seeks to be adaptive, continuous, and iteratively reviewed to ensure that it develops as we learn and grow. And this comes back to the point we've already made that strategy, the document itself is not the strategy. And the problem we have is that we often say, you go and look in the strategy, or write the company's 10-year strategy, or I need a social media strategy. And the reality is that you end up with the document being referred to as the strategy, where of course strategy is the process you go through to meet long-term goals. And we said in the episode 7, strategy comes from the word strategia or strategios, the Greek word, and it comes from, you know, the Western world's idea of warfare that comes from the classic Peloponnesian ideas of warfare. And it's the art of the general. And it's the art of the general, not the orders the general wrote down. So the document itself is a way, it is part of the communication process. So the second thing is, the second paragraph of this purpose document is, it says here, it has been designed and developed around a process that deliberately ignores the restraints of current policy and attempts to test the underlying assumptions of the organizational culture. To that end, it is often uncomfortable to read and tackles embedded organizational and cultural issues. If we are to enact the recognized need for radical change, it follows that we must first of all recognize what we are doing that is not fit for purpose. This organization is struggling, like a lot of organizations, with the rapid change in technological and social change as a result of, you know, the internet, as a result of AI and a whole load of things. And this client is trying to work out what they do well and what they used to do well and perhaps don't do quite so well or is less relevant, but also more importantly, going forward, what is going to become less and less relevant. And the art of doing this, of course, is to have a wide view, a wide range of views about how the world might change. This is not about prediction. This is about understanding trends of change, but also being very honest about the things that you do right now that used to be really, really good and perhaps aren't. And also being very, very honest about, if you want cultural change, why? What is it that's wrong with your culture right now? And talking about culture and the things that are wrong with your culture is deeply uncomfortable.
That's such an interesting point, that the fact that this document talks about culture, in my experience, arguably limited, I've never heard a business talk about culture. And yet, as we've discussed, culture is really, really, really important, both in terms of the culture of the organization and its ability to adapt, but also culture with a big C, I don't know whether that works, of the culture of the world around it. So that's a fascinating thought. The last strategy you participated in, did it talk about the culture of the organization? Because if you're looking for transformation, culture is a huge part of that. In almost every business I've been in, it has not, as lots of people have assumed, been about changing the process. Everyone assumes, look, Chris, just could you roll out the process you did at your last organization? It is process to support the culture change. So I thought that's really interesting about culture. Little dead end, and I don't want to take you down here too long, but we talked before the break about the fact that strategy is ever evolving.
Yeah.
Strategy continues to change because Schrodinger's cat, by even inspecting the strategy, the circumstances change around it. When you've written a document like this, how does that strategy evolve? Because you've almost constrained it to a piece of paper. I've got a view on this, but what's your view? You know, you've written this down. So how do you keep it alive and how do you keep changing?
So the first thing to recognize is who is this document for and what is it for? So the next thing I was going to read is this bit here that says, this strategy headmark does not seek to be and is not the definitive answer. It is in part a straw man designed to generate debate, discussion and collaboration around some of the organization's most thorny and sometimes sensitive challenges. It has a clear and coherent vision, providing the intellectual basis for the conduct of our activities going forward. It is generic, and the details will come out in further documentation and review as we learn and grow together. So the purpose of this document is to convince the senior executives in this organization to recognize the scale of the problem that they perhaps have, and then to challenge that and to say, well, actually, I don't think it's quite as bad, or I think this is good. And like I said, it's a straw man, but
it's to set up the conversation. Set up the conversation and the strategy.
Absolutely. What this isn't is the definitive document that you hand out to everybody, all the employees, and say, read this and now you'll understand. There has to then be a process of, once we go through collectively agreeing what we want to change, what processes we want to implement to do that, we then need to communicate that out. And so this is not the only planning process for strategy. There are many out there, but this is one that I quite like. The first one is to identify the enduring vision and purpose of the organization. So what is it that you are for? Not what do you do? So, you know, Facebook, for example, became Meta. They've changed what they do, but what are they for? Now, I've probably picked a terrible contentious one there, but the organization must have been founded for a purpose. It must collectively have a sense of what it's for. And hopefully that is to impart good in the world in some way. So it's really important to understand that, because that's your starting point to then ask, where are we now? Currently, are we achieving that? Did we used to achieve it, but for some reason we don't anymore? Have we drifted? Is there a moral drift, a cultural drift, a technological drift? Have we become complacent in what we do? And actually, there are competitors who are moving faster than us. So you have to ask where we currently are. So there has to be a huge amount of audit and exploratory research that is internal to the organization that says, let's really delve into the detail here. And this is where we've got to be really honest with ourselves. So this isn't the CEO saying, where are we? And everybody saying, it's all good, boss. Everything's going really well. We're doing brilliant. This is people saying, do you know what? Some of our employees are burning out through stress, or we've got a whole team of people that don't feel appreciated in what they do. We've got a whole budget line that is going on machinery that actually it's doing something that somebody can now do with a 3D printer in their garage. We're spending millions of pounds a year on old technology. So it's looking at holistically the organization, the entire enterprise, in terms of people, process, technology and outputs. The second question then is, where could we be? What could we be doing in the future that we think the world is going to look like? Where could we be in that? Which means you've now got to go external to the organization and start looking at trend. And again, this is not about prediction. This is about understanding the likely effects of trend lines of technology. So I don't know whether we're going to see a massive growth boom as a result of AI, but the trend is telling me that AI is going to be more and more important. So one of the first things I want to do is say, how is AI going to affect us going forward? And strategies need to be time bounded, but again, they're iterative. So we need to start looking at what the world looks like and how that's going to change our competitors, how that's going to change our customers, how that's going to change our suppliers, how that's going to change our employees, and the where we get our employees from, wider society, how it's going to change our ability to communicate with all of those people, how it's going to change the legal and policy framework. So there's a whole load of analysis. And this is where you can get out, you know, external consultants to come in and provide scenarios and run war games and do all those kind of really great things. The next question is, where do we want to go? In that world, where could we be? Where do we want to be? Where do we want to go? And this is coming back to your enduring vision and purpose. How do you achieve that in the world of the future? Now, that world of the future might be 12 months or it might be 10 years. It doesn't really matter. Then there is the question of how do we get there? And that's the difficult question, because that's where you need to start working back from.
It needs to be bounded. The run up to that, you don't want to be constrained by what you can do today.
Yes.
But it's the how do we get there starts with you. Well, I want to be in the moon.
Yeah.
On the moon, and I don't have a rocket.
Yes.
To build a rocket. Or we need 1,000 soldiers to take this island. Yeah, we only have 20. What are we going to do? That is the difficult bit.
Yeah, absolutely. But what's important is we started with what are we for? What's our enduring purpose and vision? We started then to look at where are we now? But what we didn't do is build out from where we are now. We then jumped forward to where do we want to go? What does the world look like? And now we're coming back from that. And what we're trying to do is draw those golden threads that says, you want to go to the moon? Right, well, we've just about gone above the Kármán line. You know, our rockets can get us 100 kilometers above the Earth. We've got to get 385,000 kilometers. So perhaps we need to think differently about the rockets rather than just build a slightly more efficient current version. You want to get to the moon? Well, we've only put people in space for 24 hours. So there's a whole load of life support. There's a whole load of psychological, you know, and this is where getting a diverse range of experts from across your organization to say, oh my God, you want that big, hairy, audacious goal. Well, you need to think about X. You need to be, and if you get your HR team in and you get your finance team in, you get your marketing team in, you get your sales team in, you get your engineering in, and you get your management board in, and they will all throw spears at it and say, we don't have the training because we've never done AI, or we don't have the psychological, you know, resilience to send people to space for 5 days. We really need to start thinking about how we do that now. And what you end up with is kind of the seeds of change that need to happen now to grow into, hopefully, the capabilities that will allow you to achieve your goal in the future.
Well, and to tie that back to what you said, sort of the strategy is the kinds of things you would do to get there. What you have just described is in the last set of activities. Okay, if we do thing X, does that get us closer or further away to the destination we have just described? And that to me is, I think, where my comfort on strategy is. Strategy is the thing you can test the tactic against.
Yes.
And say, does that get me closer? And that's a nice sort of separation. But again, side point, I'm going for all the side points. Just in case anyone's wondering, AI is not a goal, is not a strategy, or is it tactics? The next person that tries to tell me AI is our strategy, with the greatest respect, you have told me nothing. Yeah. You have said there is a generic area of capabilities, but you have not told me what problem you are solving with them. Just a what? Small thing, because yeah, no, at the moment I hear this all the time.
AI is a capability, and therefore we know tactics is the use of capability. Yes, exactly. To achieve that. If you know what task you want to achieve, using AI is going to be really important. If you don't, but you have a sense that it's going to change your operating environment, then you need to start doing some strategic thought to work back. But of course, AI itself is a capability. What's difficult about AI or quantum computing or a whole multitude of other emerging technologies is that they are capabilities that are rapidly changing. So there is an extra element of having to think about, as we go forward, how are these capabilities likely to change? But this is the next bit, which is, once you've said, how do we get there? What are the seeds we need to plant now? You then need to start working through, how do we actually, so we've said, how do we get there? Getting there. What does getting there look like? What does it feel like? So this is now turning the seeds of growth of those lines that are going to take us out to this strategic objective. So we've done the compass bearing. We've set the bezel. We pointed it in the direction and said, right, it's about 100 kilometers in that direction. Let's start walking. What we now need to start looking at is, well, actually, if we're going to do a journey, what do we need to change in terms of our people? So what's our communication plan for this? What's the management of expectation? Because change is hard. What do we need to stop doing in order to start doing other stuff? And this is really difficult and quite often the bit that fundamentally gets left out.
Can I just actually, you are right, by the way, businesses are dreadful at stopping doing a thing because you're doing that thing for a good reason in the first place. Yes. And by the way, in my world, if you have customers doing that thing, it's triply hard. But you've just described how to make it easier. If I say to you, you should stop doing that thing because I don't want you to do that thing anymore. Sorry, I have to keep doing that thing and I can give you 20 good reasons why I have to stop doing that thing. If you say to me, we are stopping doing that thing so that we can do this thing, so that we can march a kilometer closer to the point we're trying to get to, now all of a sudden as an organization, it's less about the we're stopping and more about we're changing to be more able to get to this place. Now, the way you're getting to has to be more attractive than where you are or where you would go if you carried on doing those things. But for me, that has been really valuable. Too many times people say stop.
Yeah.
And that's it, the beginning, the end. It's much better to say, we really need to get there. And so that is why we need to stop doing this. You're going to be more successful that way.
Yeah. And then the final step, and this brings us back to the point of good strategy does not stand still, is asking the question, is there still there? Has the situation changed such that we need to do a reevaluation? And of course, strategy happens over the long term. So you might have a 10-year strategy, but within that 10-year strategy, you might need to then do a 2-year strategy. And every 2 years, you need to be reviewing. And then within that, you might want to do a quarterly strategy. And this is all fine because these are nested. And what you're doing is just delving into more and more levels of detail.
What you've just described is the iteration process. And this is something which I kind of learned through doing, and I'm not going to call this grand strategy. For me, I'm going to boil this down to an idea. And I think there's a connection between an idea and strategy. And what I found was I needed to talk to people to develop the idea. The idea I started with on Monday, by the time I'd spoken to 5 people each day, by the Friday, the idea was very different. I think you could apply that to the strategy. But a couple of other magical things happened as I had those conversations. Number one, each time I was testing the conversation, I worked out which bits worked and which bits didn't work. So conversation one, I had 10 pieces of information. Conversation two of them had been discarded or modified, and we kept polishing the idea and changing the idea. So that was the first thing. The iteration made it better. And I think that's true of strategy in whatever your iteration is. The other bit as well, and I use this term, you're auditioning the strategy. Every time you have a conversation about it, you are sharing it with someone. You're auditioning it. You're trying the language. And not only do you, when you finish that conversation, have a slightly better version of that strategy, you now have a slightly better version of that strategy that 2 people own. Not just the person who started, but now a person. And I've always felt this with, I mean, this is presentations. One of the, don't tell anyone, tricks I've used in the past is I start a big presentation with the slide that says, these ideas have been discussed with these people, because I'm proving this is iterated and they're bought into it. So this idea of iteration on strategy, you're using the laws of evolution to make a better strategy.
Yeah, right. So we've been talking now for an hour and I haven't even started on the stuff I wanted to talk about in this episode.
Nice. That seems, we did that well.
Yeah. So I think it's been a really useful conversation, but I think we need to come back to this next week and we need to talk about actually what a strategy looks like, what strategic management and strategic leadership looks like, and what it doesn't look like, and where strategy can go wrong. So I think for now, we've had a really good hour discussion about why it's important. We've talked about a generic kind of process. There are other ways of, you know, tackling the same problem, but it's all of the things we've talked about in terms of understanding where you need to get to. It's creating the vision to achieve your long-term enduring goals. And then it's about working out the growth path and the journey of getting there. And then more importantly, going on the journey and changing and adapting as new information comes in. So I think next week we'll review that. We'll look at what strategic management looks like, what strategic leadership looks like. And they are two subtly different things.
This all sounds so easy. I'm sure everyone's got it by now. Everyone said, I'm going to stop the podcast and I'm going to write the strategy paper, which if we discuss a bad thing. Yeah, let's come back and keep talking about it, because this is hard, but it's where the rubber hits the road.
It is. Like management books or like plans, you know, writing a strategy document is not a bad thing. Thinking you've then nailed it and done it and handing it off, that is a bad thing. So I'm not in any way disparaging the idea of a strategy document. In fact, I've literally read from one today. We need documentation. Communication is a huge part of this. But let's come back next week and let's look at actually where sometimes things like becoming enamored by the document means strategy goes awry.
Excellent. I think that's a good place to stop. I think we've said it only 4 or 5 times. Episode 7, what is strategy? And frankly, we've got well over 60, 65 episodes to go back and look at. And if you are new to the podcast, do go back and check some of those out, because I think we're like a spider's web, our podcast, in terms of every concept touches every other concept. So please do go have a look. Rate and subscribe. I'm sure is it like and subscribe? Subscribe so you get it every week, and rate it, because if you rate it on whatever platform you listen to, it helps us actually get other people to come find it and build a larger community. I think that's it though for today. I kind of want to get straight on and talk about the next episode. You'll have to wait till next week. And I can tell you a secret. Often we would record the next episode immediately, but Gareth and I are both on aeroplanes going different ways. So we're going to come back a little bit later, carry on the conversation. Thank you for listening as always. And we'll speak to you again very soon.
Cool. Look forward to it. Cheerio.
Bye-bye.